Hi, on this episode of the Primate Cast, Dr. Takeshi Furuichi on Bonobo v. Chimpanzee, studies in the DR Congo and behavioral models of human evolution.
Evolution.
Communication.
Cognition.
Conservation.
Behavior.
Primatology.
Primatology.
Typically primates.
Become the monkey.
Hi again, it's great to have you back here for another installment of the Primate Cast. This is episode number 69. I'm Andrew McIntosh of Kyoto University's Wildlife Research Center, and last month, in June 2022, I got to sit down with my colleague and someone I admire greatly, Dr. Takeshi Furuichi. Furuichi-san is a leading expert in the behavior of bonobos, and he's gone to great lengths to better understand how and why they differ from their close cousins, the chimpanzees. He runs the long-term study site at Wamba Village in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. Or, well, since he's on the cusp of retirement, he's in the process of handing that off, but his work has continued to shed light on the evolution of the genus Pan and what it means for our own evolutionary story as well. In the interview, we meander through a lot of interesting topics. We discuss why Japanese primatologists, for example, have almost exclusively studied Japanese macaques and African great apes. And Furuichi-san describes at great length how the small village of Wamba in the middle of the Congo Basin became the setting for one of the most influential bonobo study sites in the world, and the trials and tribulations of those who made that happen. Now, we were on that topic for a good deal of time in the middle of this interview, but eventually got back to non-human primates, when I got Furuichi-san to talk about bonobos and chimpanzees and how they're the same, how they're different, and why. He provides a great summary of his work, which makes for a great primer on ecology and evolution within the genus Pan. And he ends with a discussion of how he and his partner, Dr. Chie Hashimoto, are doubling down to uncover the inner relationships between sex and society. For listeners, I think it comes out pretty early on that Furuichi-san is a great storyteller. He drops tons of little nuggets of information and wisdom throughout the interview. So I hope that you all enjoy listening to this interview as much as I had recording it. For anyone interested in finding out more about the work of Furuichi-san and his group, check out the show notes on the SciCast website. And I also recommend checking out the website for the NGO that he spearheaded called Support for the Conservation of Bonobos, where you can hear, learn a lot more about bonobos, the jungles they live in and the people of Wamba, and the Kyoto University group's efforts to protect them. To get us started, I opened the interview with a bit of an oddball question about why he's more chimpanzee than bonobo. But you'll have to listen to the whole thing to really understand his answer. Enjoy! So I remember, it must have been a few years ago when you were putting together your book, Bonobo and Chimpanzee, mm-hmm. the English translation of it.
Yeah, yeah.
And we were talking about something and you mentioned that, I think we were talking about the differences mm-hmm. between bonobos and chimpanzees, and maybe bonobo males and chimpanzee males. Uh-huh. And I asked you if you had to pick, which are you? And you said, I want to say bonobo, uh-huh. but if I'm being honest, maybe chimpanzee.
Yeah. I know.
I wonder if you could explain what you meant by that, and then we'll lead into the rest of the interview that way.
But I must refine myself. In part, very, very egoistic and aggressive in my mind. Mm-hmm. And then those are the characters that we share with the chimpanzee males. Bonobo males have the same tendency of behavior, mm-hmm. but their aggressiveness or something like that is completely controlled by females. Mm-hmm. So if I am asked, I want to behave like females of bonobos, but in reality, I am male chimpanzees.
Okay, so maybe by the end of the interview, the mm-hmm. listeners will be able to understand that a little more.
Yeah.
But I want to start then, or move into asking you what, this is kind of like a evolutionary question in historical context, mm-hmm. but why does bonobo exist?
Uh-huh.
So where did the bonobo come from? And why is it separated from chimpanzees?
Okay, so until several years ago, many people considered that the Great Congo River divides the range of proto-pan. Mm-hmm. Proto-pan is a common ancestor of chimpanzees and bonobos. Then on the left bank, the population became bonobos. And then right bank, populations became chimpanzees. Mm-hmm. However, we found with the collaborative work with Takemoto that it is not impossible. It is totally impossible. Because the divergence time between chimpanzees and bonobos was considered around 3 million years ago. Mm-hmm. And the people considered that the river was also formed 3 million years ago. Mm-hmm. However, recent studies suggest that bonobos and chimpanzees was diverged 1 to 2 million years ago.
Okay.
So a little bit of difference occurred.
I see.
Then a much greater difference occurred because these days there is a kind of the drilling survey,
okay,
of the mouth of Congo River,
right,
for the sake of the mineral or oil or something like that. Then they examined the sediments, mm-hmm, of the mouth of the Congo, and they found that Congo River had been existing as it is now at least more than 30 million years ago.
Wow.
Not 3 million years ago.
Right. So maybe to give context, how big is the Congo River? So if the hypothesis is that the river itself is the dividing
feature.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, yeah. Currently, the widest position of the Congo River is about 15 kilometers.
Oh, so that's quite big.
Very, very big.
Yeah.
Then, bonobos cannot diverge from chimpanzees only 1 to 2 million mm-hmm years ago by the river that was formed more than 30 million years ago.
Yeah.
Then Takemoto did a lot of study on the geographical studies or biogeography, mm-hmm, and then he found that most of the common ancestor of hominine, chimpanzee, bonobo, gorilla, and human, mm-hmm, was living only on the north of the Congo River.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. And then at that time, Equator was also a little bit north.
Mm-hmm.
Then south of the Congo River, the biodiversity is very poor and not so many mammal species were there.
Mm-hmm.
Then at some several points, for example, 1.8 million years ago or 1 million years ago, there's a very severe aridity in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
Then in that period, probably the upper stream of the Congo River became very shallow.
I see.
And then some small population could wade over to the southern area of the Congo River.
Mm-hmm.
Then it raised again.
I see, right, yeah, yeah.
Then many other findings by other researchers supported this idea, but even now, bonobos populations have a very little, less genetic diversity,
right,
compared with chimpanzees. And when they examined the genetic difference of the different population of bonobos, they found that it goes to the single population.
Okay, so there's a clear founder.
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm, yeah. Mm. So Takemoto discovered that things, and then we published it in Evolutionary Anthropology.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it will be criticized severely.
Okay.
We reported it in a conference, Congress of the International Primatological Society.
Yeah.
And we thought we will be very severely criticized, but nobody.
Really?
And then a reviewer of the paper of the evolutionary anthropology criticized some part of the structure of the paper.
Mm-hmm.
But that basic idea, nobody criticized.
That's really interesting.
Yeah,
so if I remember, Takemoto-san was using a lot of data of like hydrology and geography.
Yeah.
So that's maybe not usually the kind of data that field primatologists are accessing. How, I mean, you must have been part of that idea from the beginning, but how did the idea start to develop? within your research group and thinking about it?
Because Takemoto himself was studying geology in Hokkaido University.
Right.
And he was very, very interested in it. Mm-hmm. And he's very good at reading those difficult papers for us.
Yeah.
And he did a lot of literature survey, and then he found that things.
Right, okay.
And then until now, after that, he constructed the flow of the diversion. Diversity of the bonobos.
Mm-hmm.
It started from the east end, and then how bonobos moved to other area by the analysis of the mitochondrial DNA.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. And all those studies are now accepted by many researchers.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm currently editing a book for the commemorative research of bonobos of 50 years study.
Yeah.
It will be published in by Springer, and then I asked Richard Langer to write the last chapter, two last chapters, one by Richard and one by myself.
Okay,
because he's a real ecologist and I am a behavioralist.
Yeah,
so I invited him to write the chapter to compare those, and then so that the authors. Readers understand the comprehensive evolutionary theory, and he accepted it, and he wrote it. And to my surprise, he completely accepted that theory.
Okay. I guess usually we're used to finding more kind of confrontation and conflict in it. It does sound like a nice way to complete this story, though. And also, that's interesting that you mention Richard Wrangham as well. I think we can come back to that. But he's been very influential in writing about and trying to understand human nature based on chimpanzee as a model.
Mm-hmm.
So he's written quite extensively about hunting and even cooking and meat eating and things like this. And you yourself have been working more with bonobos and thinking about how bonobo society could also be a model for us. But I want to talk about that later.
Mm-hmm.
Before getting into that, you mentioned that the bonobo, so population genetics, there's quite a small gene pool, and there's actually not that many bonobos out there, are there? So what is the total population?
Currently?
Yeah, currently of bonobos in here.
Maybe around 20,000.
Mm-hmm. It's quite small, and quite especially small. Compared to chimpanzees.
But that is already very opportunistic estimation.
Right. Of course, it's very hard to access where bonobos live. So currently, how many field sites are there?
So one by Gottfried Hohmann and the Max Planck Institute.
Yeah.
It is in the Louis Cotal.
Mm-hmm.
And then another is Wamba, our study site. And then another is Martin Sarek, who was also studying bonobos in Rikotar, moved out from there. And then he established another new study site just next to us.
I see.
So that is Kokoropori.
I see.
Mm-hmm. And then probably main behavioral studies based on the individual identifications are being done by those three main study sites.
Yeah.
But other than that, there are many ecological studies in Bali or Tier 2 area or Lactumba hinterland. Yes, but not so many.
Yeah, that's right.
Even now. Yeah.
Okay. Mm. So that's like maybe a good point to get into a bit of the history of that. So before I ask about Wamba and the history of your field site, you mentioned Lake Tumba, so that's part of the history of the Japanese primatology and studying bonobos. I want to ask a different question first, which is, and I think this has come up a few times, but within Japanese primatology, we have a very rich history that goes back 7 decades. And one thing that you notice, there's of course a lot of research on the Japanese macaque, but also there was so many efforts to build African ape field sites You have this, I suppose you could characterize Japanese primatology as macaques and African apes. Mm-hmm. Why did that happen that way?
So, as you know, the Japanese primatology started as a study of Japanese macaques by Professor Edani and Professor Kawai. Mm-hmm. Mm. Of course, at that time, the Japanese researchers were not very rich, mm-hmm. and then they could do only the field work within Japan. So, as you know, Japan is the only one developed country mm-hmm. Where we have wild primates. Mm. So we have a lot of opportunities to study the Japanese macaques. Mm-hmm. However, on the other hand, the origin of the primatologists in Japan, their original interest was on the human evolution.
Right.
Mm. So they are always wants to see some primates, which is much closer to us human. Mm-hmm. So Kinji Manishi and other researchers first considered that the gorilla must be the, right. the very original form of the humans because they form a kind of a group of a kind of the family.
Yeah.
So they went there. But eventually, they found that the chimpanzee society is much closer to humans.
Right.
Mm. Then I think the first expedition was 1957 or 58. Wow. It was my birth year.
Fate.
Yeah. But at the time, it was very difficult for the Japanese poor Japanese researchers to go to Africa. But in those era, there was great big supporters. For example, the president of the Nippon Ginko, mm-hmm. Nippon Bank,
the Japan Bank,
yeah, Japan Bank. He supported the excursion of the Edani.
Yeah,
and then. When they started the study of chimpanzees in Tanzania, they borrowed a full ship to build a new prefabric house and the literature. And they even brought the workers to construct those facilities from the very beginning.
Wow.
So now it's totally impossible.
It's incredible.
Mm. So probably at that time, even non-researcher, some big man or some rich man had a very big interest on the human evolution.
I see.
And they were had an interest on the study of the African great apes.
So do you know how people like, whether it's Imanishi or Itani, how would they approach those wealthy individuals or corporations to try and get some financial support to go to Africa? Or was there some just, I don't know, influence from the top down saying we want to do this if anybody wants to?
I actually don't know very well, but in those old days, the researchers and some rich owner of the company and even the government people, they have a very close,
I see,
a kind of a network.
Right.
Mm. So when they wanted to start the study with the primatology, then Ministry of the Literature mm-hmm. suddenly agreed to establish this institute.
Wow.
And they paid a lot of money and made this company, Nagoya Railways, donated this land, and then they established another zoo next to this one.
Yeah.
So those people have a very open mind.
Yeah.
And then they very eagerly support those interesting studies.
Yeah.
Mm.
So the timeline is kind of similar to when Louis Leakey would have been pushing the study of African great apes and Jane Goodall starting in Gombe.
Yeah,
I know the Japanese scientists were here slightly before that originally. exploring. Mm-hmm. And so Jane Goodall on this podcast mentioned that at Gombe once Itani just showed up uninvited or unannounced. And he said something like, Louis Leakey told me not to come here.
Yeah.
Here I am. So, and there were a few of them. So including the person who eventually started the field sites at Wamba, mm-hmm. Where you work. So that would be Takuyoshi Kano, I believe, who, in my understanding, was riding around Zaire at the time by bicycle.
Yeah, by bicycle.
So I'm trying to understand the mindset of some of these people who just were doing that in Africa.
Yeah, at first he tried to study chimpanzees in Eastern Africa.
Yeah.
Then Professor Nishida conducted the first extensive survey of bonobos. Mm-hmm. Because by that time, bonobos were not very, very known.
Yeah.
And then in late 1920s, they started to consider that the bonobos might be a different species. Mm. So American researchers borrowed some bonobos.
Yeah.
But they never returned. Yeah. And then they studied those bonobos in the United States in captivity.
Is that Yerkes? That
was Yerkes, Yerkes Research Center. Mm-hmm. Then, so after that, Nishida wanted to find a good study sites of bonobos. Mm-hmm. Nishida sent Kano to follow up his extensive survey. Mm-hmm. And the Kano-san first went to Congo and he bought a vehicle. Mm. But as you can imagine, the road is so bad and that vehicle was immediately broken. So after that, he decided to go by bicycle, and there was a very big staff of 70 kilo or something like that.
That's incredible.
Yeah, and he moved around.
Did he have people with him in the entourage or just alone?
Completely alone.
Wow.
And it should have been very, very difficult journey, because in all those days, the people living there were very much afraid of the exterior people. So Kano was not welcomed in most of the villages.
Yeah.
When Kano came to sleep on that village, and he asked some people cook chicken for him, but they are afraid and they cooked, but they jet the sand on it.
I see.
Mm. So that he will go away.
I see.
Very soon. Mm. So it must have been a very, very difficult journey.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. And one priest told me that he was a Belgian priest, and Kano-san suddenly came to the church, and he was so heavily sunburned.
Oh boy.
And very dirty East Japanese people or Asian people. Right. And Kano-san could not speak very well. And that priest said, was water, water. since that time, that priest was a great supporter for our study. But finally, Kano-san came to a small village, Wamba.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I don't know why, but the Wamba people was very open-minded, and they welcomed Kano,
mm-hmm.
and they cooked very good things to mm-hmm. eat. And then Kano-san could hear a voice from the village. Then he decided, okay, I will take this place as a new study site.
That's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, I mean, obviously language must have been an issue for him too.
I think so. However, probably he spoke Lingala, I think.
Before entering? Or somehow during the journey?
during the journey, but I think even myself, I studied Lingala only for 2 weeks.
I see.
By book of the American Peace Corps.
I see.
And then the classic Lingala is very difficult, but those practical Lingala is not very difficult.
I see.
Like a kind of the Esperanto.
Right.
So simplified language.
Right.
So I read those books for 2 weeks or three. Then I went to Congo. Mm-hmm. At that time, I couldn't know at all. Mm-hmm. But while I was staying there alone, I could understand most of the things within 2 or 3 months.
Okay.
Mm. So Professor Kano is also very, very good at Lingala language. He has a talent of the language.
I see.
Mm. So he should have communicated in Lingala.
I see.
Because nobody speaks English there.
Of course. Well.
Mm. French or Lingala.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to ask you if he learned French first before going...
No.
Okay.
No.
Because you yourself, you speak French, so...
Yeah, a little bit, yes. Mm. So when I came back... So my first trip was for 7 months. And then when I came back, I was quite satisfied with my Lingala ability. But in order to communicate with the officers and...
Yeah.
In order to read the documents, I thought I needed to learn French.
Yeah.
So I went to study French at the French language school just next to our university.
I see.
Mm, yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, I want to talk a bit later about the... Because Wamba now is, as you mentioned, coming up on 50 years. So we can go through the history of that. But in the beginning, my understanding was that they... So Kano-san and at the time Kuroda, so he's a Kuroda as well, started studying at Wamba.
Mm-hmm.
They were provisioning
bonobos.
So this obviously follows what was done with the Japanese macaques as well in the early studies where they provisioned to have a better understanding of behavior and the social structure and things and individuals. So was that the motivation for doing it, to increase the habituation of the group and also observe them more closely?
Yes, but so in the very beginning, Kuroda-san wants to study bonobos without provisioning.
I see.
But it was very difficult
to
follow them and then identify them. However, he found that another group of bonobos was coming to the village.
I see.
To eat the sugarcane
right.
in the villagers' field.
I see.
So it was not Kuroda who started to give the sugarcane, but the bonobos came to eat the sugarcane of the field. So Kuroda decided to gather more sugarcane there and then started to identify.
So does that like stimulate the local economy, I guess, in sugarcane?
These
researchers are buying and...
But in the very beginning days, of course, in Japan, we are provisioning Japanese macaques to identify individuals. And then most of the European and the American researchers consider that it is useless to identify individual monkeys or apes.
Yeah.
They are more interested in the ecological studies, but they thought that the social relationship is not so complicated and not an interesting theme of the research. However, so many people criticize the artificial provisioning, but it is very strange, but they don't criticize Jane Goodall.
Right, so they also included artificial conditioning.
However, more and more criticism occurred toward the 1980s or 90s. Then, for example, Christoph Boeisch studied the new study sites of chimpanzees, and he, of course, he didn't give any food.
Yeah.
And then he strongly criticized artificial provisioning. Then there occurred a war in Congo. At first, in 1991-1992. Then after that, in 1996, 6 years of war occurred. So during that break, of course, we couldn't give them any artificial food. Then when I came back there in 2002 to resume the study of bonobos, I decided, okay, so we don't give any more food, artificial food.
Yeah. So around the time the war happened, so you've published the kind of the population dynamics in a way from before and after that kind of Congo crisis. And it looked like the population of bonobos was quite high before the conflict. And then over the time of the, maybe we'll just talk about this conflict now, but over the time of the conflict, then the population decreased, at least of the groups that you could study. So how long were the researchers absent, and what kind of activities were able to be maintained? Because I know you had a bunch of assistants, local community still contributing to the research and protection of bonobos. But I imagine as it gets longer and longer and more pressure from, I don't know, soldiers and invading people. So what was that like at that moment? And
It was a very difficult time. Because of one period of our absence, it was only 2 years, but the research assistant had no way to get a salary. But some of them were doing some study following bonobos in the forest in the hope that we are coming back in the future. And there was a very interesting story. We wanted to tell them that please continue the study, then we are coming back. So one of the German businessmen living in Kenya who helped Professor Kano to bring the letter to the area, because he had a private airplane, so he flew over Wamba and then dropped the letter with Kano, writing that please don't give up, we are coming back. And one of our most experienced research assistant, Koi Batorumbo, received that letter. And he was very very much encouraged and continued. But he was arrested. Saying that he did some magic to call the airplane to illegally communicate with the outside of the world during that kind of the war. So he was arrested and imprisoned, and he was asked to pay a lot of money.
So I'm starting to mix up different topics, but that reminds me also of a story that's in one of your book chapters about during the conflict. There were soldiers that would come in to around Wamba and obviously would need food, so they would be looking for bushmeat interested in hunting the bonobos as well. So they were asking your trackers to help them find bonobos. And the story was that eventually the trackers had no choice after trying to lead them away from the bonobos. But the soldiers in the end had a hard time shooting.
So this was the same tracker assistant, Koi Batarum. He's still alive. He was the one Professor Kano first worked with.
Wow.
So 1973 until now. Of course, he's retired. So he was a kind of the chief of the researcher. And then the soldiers asked him to guide them to the sleeping site of bonobos. But Koi Batarumbo repeatedly took them to the different directions. And the soldiers got very much upset. And one day, they called Koi Batarumbo in the center of the village and at the gunpoint. Today we will see bonobo, otherwise we will kill you. So without no other way, he took the soldiers to the sleeping site. Then soldiers asked, which one to kill? So Koi Batarumbo pointed one of the young adult male who walked up at first, and see the soldiers and the Koi Batarumbo from the nest. then soldiers shoot it. Mm-hmm. But several bullets went in the air. Mm-hmm. But the soldiers and the nest is very near. Mm. But the soldiers were not successful for several times. They finally, they got it, but they became very, very afraid, considering that bonobos are doing some kind of the magic.
Yeah.
Because those people in Africa is deeply believing the magic.
Yeah.
So soldiers were very much afraid, and they didn't kill any more bonobos.
Yeah, so those two stories side by side show how there can be advantages and disadvantages to the local belief system,
mm-hmm.
For them, but also for doing research and protecting wildlife. But so can you, we've heard other stories about how these kind of belief systems might influence how people mm-hmm. interact or how what you can and can't say in the field. Mm-hmm. But what is the kind of traditional relationship between the local people at Wamba and the bonobos in particular forest? Because I believe they were generally living peacefully together and mm-hmm, the mm-hmm. local people were not really hunting.
Actually, their understanding of the human and the bonobos is very, very scientific.
Okay.
They believe that both human and the bonobos or descendant of one bonobo family in the forest.
I see.
And there are two brothers, elder brother and younger brother. And the elder brothers followed his father's lifestyle mm-hmm. Very well. So, however, the younger brother was very tired of eating raw materials every day, leaves and fruits. And he was crying in the forest and he was roaming alone. Then a kind of the god of the forest mm-hmm. Found him, and then the god gave him a fire, and then using that fire he opened some area of the forest and made a village, then became a human.
I see.
Mm. So this is the belief of the village people, and then therefore they consider that the bonobos and the humans are brothers.
Mm. Mm.
So if they kill bonobos and eat, it is just like kill people and eat mm. people. Mm. So they don't.
I see. But then you had observed some instances of poaching for
yes,
bonobos.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
But that's usually from people from outside, I suppose.
Yeah, but very sadly, these days, that kind of traditional taboo seems to be broken. Mm. For example, Dr. Aya Yokotsuka,
mm-hmm.
mm, she studied the villagers' attitudes to the bonobos, and then how they believe that or follow that traditional taboo against killing and eating bonobos.
Mm.
She did that study after the war. Then she visited many villages, and even the next village to Wamba, when she asked the villagers, have you ever ate bonobo? Some people answered, yes,
mm-hmm.
we ate it. Mm. Other villages, we ate it.
Mm-hmm.
So, and she asked, so when did you eat bonobos for the last time? They say that we don't eat them these days.
I see.
Mm. Because there's no bonobo anymore.
Oh, boy.
So, in that way, probably during the war, many people from outside are coming. The soldiers, and even teachers, and many kind of the people from many different tribes.
Yeah.
And then the eating bonobos is a culture of other tribes.
Yeah.
So those kind of the custom of eating bonobos was introduced. So she found that the people answered, yes, we ate bonobos. Mostly they were the teenager during the war. So those young people didn't hesitate to accept a new custom, a new habit of eating bonobos.
Mm. Right.
So in the beginning, I told you, probably there are 20,000 bonobos now, but I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
Because that 20, that estimation of IUCN, I am also the member of the IUCN, and I did a lot of discussion to calculate that estimated number. That is usually made by the average density of bonobos multiplied by the intact forest, yeah, area of the intact forest. But the average density of bonobos is coming from the study sites. Mm.
Which are chosen by high density of bonobos. Yeah.
Then the intact forest. Forests are intact. But in the most part where Yokosuka visited, there's no bonobos.
Mm.
There also Jeff Dupin, he's also famous researcher of bonobos and currently working for conservation of bonobos of the by the team of the Frankfurt Zoo. He found the big forest in Domako. Forest was there, but no bonobos was there. Mm. So he called it empty forest syndrome. So if we multiply the density by intact forest, then it could be 20,000, for example.
Yeah.
But I think actually bonobos are actually remaining only within some small area of the protected,
yeah,
area.
Mm. How? So what do you think would be the best way to do a full census or survey of those potential habitat for bonobos? I mean, obviously the forest is very hard to move through.
It's so very difficult.
And from the air is more feasible, but it's very dense canopy.
Dense canopy. Uh-huh. So of course, we are collecting a lot of information of the sighting.
Mm-hmm.
And then Max Planck people established a very big database, APES database.
Mm-hmm.
And then we input the information of the sighting of bonobos.
Mm-hmm.
However, Congo is so big, and then the infrastructure is so bad. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
In the interior area, you can go only by walk or motorbike or by boat, but mm-hmm. it is very difficult to do the survey mm-hmm. of the entire area. Mm.
Yeah.
And then that is not a big priority right now, because even if we find, okay, bonobos are here, then what we can do?
Yeah.
Mm. So village people asked Yokosuka, why we shouldn't eat it?
Mm-hmm.
Mm. And Yokosuka couldn't answer anything. Of course, in the protected area, okay, we can provide them some benefit when they protect them. But in a very big range of the bonobos, in most of the area, nobody can give any benefit for protecting bonobos.
Mm-hmm.
So the village people ask, why not? Mm.
I can imagine for Aya at the time, she was also a graduate student. So it's a very challenging question.
Yeah, yeah.
But mm-hmm. even for, mm-hmm. yeah, it's a very, probably with no answer.
Yeah, no answer. And then I think probably bonobo should be protected in some protected area,
mm-hmm.
like Tier 2 and Lomako and Wamba and Sarongo National Park.
Mm-hmm.
And probably we need to forget other places.
Mm. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing I wanted to ask you about was you, so at Wamba, eventually you were involved in the creation of what you ended up making a scientific reserve, the Luo mm-hmm. Scientific mm-hmm. Reserve. But mm-hmm. you wrote that in, when building it, there was a lot of discussion about what kind of level of protection to make.
Yeah, I know. Mm.
And so how did you eventually decide on the scientific reserve? And what's the difference between that and, say, a national park or I don't know, conservation area or something else?
Yeah, it was not my decision, but the decision of Professor Kano. But apparently, these days not. But in all those old days, when we make a national park, we usually have to ask the priest to village people to leave that area. By agreement or by force, and then protect that national forest using the armed guardman, and then they sometimes fight with the village people who wants to come into for poaching. But of course, Professor Kano, or as a Japanese researcher, we couldn't accept that kind of the ways. Professor Kano succeeded in establishing the study of bonobos by the collaboration of the Wamba people, and what we had done by the time of the creation of the reserve was to try to support or help maintaining traditional coexistence between bonobos and chimpanzees. And now our research became very successful, and then people encouraged us to make some kind of the national park. But we couldn't say that, thank you very much, so now you leave this area. So we established a kind of the special reserve for scientific research where we could make rules more freely. So of course we allowed the village people to stay there, and they could cultivate about 1 kilometer from the road for cassava field and other agricultural product. And then they are allowed to hunt animals using the traditional snares made of the climber or vines. However, of course, we have to ask some limitations. They could not go into the forest to cut the primary forest for the commercial products like coffee. And they cannot use the gun. They cannot kill primates. And they cannot use the metallic wire, metallic snare or something like that. But instead, we provide them the employment, and we buy a lot of things from the village. Currently, the population of Wamba is about 4,000. Very big. Increasing a lot. But the total expenses of us to that village is probably 3 million yen. What is this? 3,000.
30,000.
No. $30,000, $30,000 or $40,000. Probably there's no other village that can get that kind of the liquid. So it's a kind of the based on the mutual agreement.
I mean, part of the, I wanted to talk more about the long, how you manage a long-term study for so long, and through collaboration with locals and the economics of it, but this is getting a bit long, and I haven't asked yet about chimpanzees and bonobos. So the main reason I wanted to have you here and talk on the Primate Cast was and actually it's a good transition, because we talk about how important the people, local people, are for your activities to study the primates in the forest. But the reason that you and others are studying those primates in the forest is to better understand the people ultimately, us, and so what the evolutionary pathways towards becoming human were like. And I know that you have a background in well, in primatology, but anthropology as well, through Kyoto University's tradition. And so maybe listeners will have a general idea, but bonobos and chimpanzees, and the way we started this interview, is that they have, of course, they're very similar. They share 99.9% of their genes, and by their appearance, by their morphology, by much of their behavior, they're very similar, except in some very important social ways. So can you just describe what, for you, are the key differences between bonobos and chimpanzees, and why is that important?
Okay, so apparently the most different thing, because both chimpanzees and bonobos form male philopatric groups, between which only females transfer between the groups. So actually, that kind of the male philopatric groups are typically found in the hominine and aterine in the South America. But so in those kind of the male philopatric group, of course, males have a very strong bond and then control the entire group, as chimpanzees do. But in bonobos, it is completely different. In chimpanzees, males always come together, stay together, and the females are scattering and join to the male's group, especially during the sexually receptive period. However, female bonobos always come together and gather in the middle of the group, and the males are periphery. And then if males and females fight, for example, of course, in chimpanzee, adult males always win against females, chimpanzees. But in bonobos, sometimes males win, but most of the time females win. Especially when males harass females, young adult females sometimes defeated by males. But when such kind of things happens, many females come together to help each other to confront the males. And when two or three males, females collaborate, 100% they will win. So most important differences between chimpanzees and the bonobos is the, that kind of the aggregation of the females and high social status of the females. So that is completely opposite.
Yeah, so I think even the general public will have the kind of general sense of those, maybe the level of competitiveness is not the right way to say it, but the level of aggression or the macro level of social interaction, where chimpanzees are known for their, especially males, for even killing of other individuals outside of the group and infanticide and these kind of things. And bonobos, that's, to my knowledge, hasn't really been observed, or at least very rarely. And the a lot of time, of course, their hypersexuality, the way they solve conflicts through sex.
So that is a very important thing. So the phenomenon, different phenomenon is females aggregate. And the females are high social status. The question is why it happened. And in the beginning of the study of the evolution of bonobos, many people seeked the reason for that evolution in the environment. So people consider that, yes, within the in the south of the Congo River, the forest is so rich compared to the outside, so the food patch is larger, or terrestrial ground herbs are very rich, so that females can come together without many indirect, much indirect competition. So that was a kind of the hypothesis. However, after that, many people studied a lot of the kind of the studies, but even now they can't find any substantial differences in that kind of the food environment. So you can imagine Congo River is a inverse U-shape. So chimpanzees and bonobos are living in the on the same latitude.
That's right.
So the opposite side of the river should be the same environment. And the chimpanzee, when I did a paper about the use of the tools, because chimpanzees use a lot of tools and the bonobos do not use the tools, And many people consider that that is due to the difference in the environment.
Yeah.
So I did a collaborative study with cricket sons for studying chimpanzees in Gualogo, just opposite side of the Congo River.
Right.
There, chimpanzees use a lot of tools, but here in Bonobos, they never use the tools. Right. Then we couldn't have any substantial differences in the environment. Mm. So I collected all information of many different study sites and found that chimpanzees live in the tropical rainforest to the very arid area. Bonobos also living in the tropical rainforest to semi-arid area. Mm. Only the difference is some chimpanzees live more arid area.
Right.
But the range of the environment of bonobo is completely included in the range of the variation of chimpanzees' habitat. Mm-hmm. So it is really difficult to answer which kind of the environmental factor caused such a difference of the female gregariousness and female high social status.
So if you think of the distribution of chimpanzees, and so we have some different subspecies in East and West Africa, and Central, but is there actually significant variation in the female aggregation?
Yes, some.
Some.
Mm. Some. However, if we compare chimpanzees and bonobos, chimpanzees living in any kind of the habitat is completely different from the bonobos.
Yeah. Mm. So the very hard thing to explain is what changed. So are they competing?
So there are some hypotheses. Recently, Richard Rangan proposes the no gorilla hypothesis.
yes. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you explain that a little?
So he thought that when bonobo came across to the southern part of the Congo River, there was no gorillas as a competitor for the terrestrial herbaceous vegetation. So that's why the scramble competition, or indirect competition, was less than in the area of chimpanzees. Mm-hmm. So that's why female chimpanzees, female bonobos could come together. Mm-hmm. However, even himself, he admitted that there are some problems on this hypothesis. For example, even in the chimpanzee site, if he compared the chimpanzee site and with gorillas and then bonobo site, there's no much difference of the frequency of eating that kind of the herbaceous vegetations. I don't think chimpanzees and gorillas competitions makes such a big difference. Mm-hmm. That continued for 2 million years ago or something like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And presumably there should be other large herbivores as well.
Mm-hmm.
Large herbivores competing for similar vegetation too.
Yeah.
I mean, you have elephants in the...
Yes. Mm-hmm. And then the chimpanzees, female scatterers, even in the tropical rainforest or in the arid area.
Yeah.
So some people say that no, currently the ecological condition is so different, but probably when chimpanzees and bonobos separate, their habitat was different.
Mm-hmm.
But that kind of thing, we have no means to know it.
Yeah.
Mm. So that is the common problem for the ecological studies.
Yeah.
So many ecological researchers consider that a priori, that current behavior or current grouping pattern adopt to the current type of the environment.
Yeah.
But we can't know.
No, we can't know.
Mm.
But since you have such a small founding population, maybe a single group of bonobos, I'm not sure, or at least a few, small number, not bonobos, of the ancestor to bonobos moving across the Congo River, is there any discussion about just a concept of, maybe it's an emerging concept of social niche construction, where you might even just have small random changes.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the individuals exist in isolation from the larger gene pool.
That is my hypothesis. So I found that the critical difference between chimpanzees and bonobos on the female aggregation and the female high social status is very stubborn, irrespective of the environmental differences. So I thought it is a real genetic differences that occurred between the founder populations. Mm-hmm. And then I thought it should have been a kind of the genetic evolutions that occurred to the female about the sexual receptivity.
Mm-hmm.
As you may know, chimpanzees females are very, very inactive sexually, because when they have a baby, they will keep giving milk for 3-4 years, and at the fourth or fifth year, female start showing sexual receptivity. Then after 6 months, she will become pregnant, and then they will not show any sexual receptivity.
Mm-hmm.
So in average, if we calculate tentatively, chimpanzee females show the sexual receptivity only 5% of the adult life.
Wow.
Mm, so very, very little.
Yeah.
However, bonobos are completely different. So the interval of bonobos is almost the same as chimpanzees. However, by the most recent study by Hashimoto and others, of course I was included, bonobos females start showing sexual receptivity only 8 months after giving birth. Chimpanzee, 4 years or 5 years. Mm. Then bonobos will conceive just the same timing as chimpanzees, 4 or 5 years, 4 years. A little bit shorter than chimpanzees, but not that different. Meaning that the bonobos continue showing sexual receptivity without the possibility of pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
So that extends the proportion of the days of females showing sexual receptivity very largely. By estimation, it is about 6 to 8 times of the days in which females, chimpanzees, show sexual receptivity. That will cause the complete difference, big difference of the operational sex ratio, and the male's competition over the mating behavior is reduced in bonobos.
Mm-hmm.
That may reduce the male's aggressions.
Mm-hmm.
And when there's many multiple females showing the estrus at a time, and many females are there, many males are there, the sexual intercourse becomes more free, and it is not determined. Successful mating is not usually determined by the male's dominance rank, or more by the female choice of the males.
Right.
So sometimes even alpha male come to in front of the receptive females and display and solicit females. But if females doesn't like, she can completely ignore as if that male is not existing. So after 2 or 3 minutes, then male will go.
Okay.
So in that sense, under such situations, of course you can consider if you have a right of decision of the sexual interactions, you should have a power.
Yeah.
Mm. So I think that kind of the extended period of the sexual receptivity caused the female high social status and reduced male aggressions.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that kind of the genetic evolution occurred in such a small population of bonobos, probably during the floating genetic fraud or something like
right.
that.
Right. Mm. Drift, yeah. Yeah. Mm.
And then Hashimoto recently did a hormonal analysis, and then she found that both in chimpanzees and bonobos, after giving birth, the estrogen level will increase steadily.
Mm.
Then in chimpanzee, it goes to the maximum level at the years of four after giving birth. Then chimpanzees started show sexual swelling and the sexual receptivity. But bonobos started to show sexual swelling and the sexual receptivity at a much lower level of estrogen. Mm. Mm. Then they will continue showing estrogen until it reaches to the maximum level when bonobos also can conceive.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. So one of the hypotheses, one of the possibilities that that kind of small genetic evolution change occurred for the estrogen receptor. Mm. So that is a very small genetic change
sure.
can make such a difference in the estrogen receptor or something like that.
And they have a huge influence on the social behavior
of
the animal. I mean, there are many, there are some studies of single gene mutations in social insects that have a similarly huge change in the overall social structure of the animals. But it's hard to imagine how such a small change can be so influential for a great ape.
I think so.
But yeah, really interesting.
So I think there was a big discussion, chimpanzees or bonobos, which is the original form.
Yeah.
And for example, Franz De Waal think that Langham is always say that the chimpanzee, like common ancestor, should be there. But Franz De Waal say that no, chimpanzees and bonobos are same distance from the people. And why Richard Langham decided a priori that common ancestors should have been like chimpanzees. But after we established that theory, evolutionary theory, by Takemoto, how the founder population came here, and when I started to consider the genetic mutations that might occur in a small founder population, I came to agree with Richard Langham that the bonobos is a derived species from the common ancestor of the chimpanzees.
Right. I mean, obviously, this is a discussion that gets right into the heart of the even public kind of science interface of trying to understand the evolutionary origins of human behavior. But even if we measure current chimpanzee behavior, it might not be that similar to the ancestral the common ancestor of chimpanzees, bonobos, and humans. So,
Do you know the research of Gen Sua?
Yeah.
Mm, who found the Lamidas.
Right.
Mm.
Yeah. Ramapithic.
And then he did a lot of research of the canine.
Yeah.
Or morphology of the canine and other teeth. And then he found that in Lamidas, the sexual dimorphism was very, very small.
Mm-hmm.
And the canine size is small. So he considered that even in the common ancestor between chimpanzees and bonobos and human, the sexual dimorphism was not so great.
Mm-hmm.
And canine sexual dimorphism was not so big. One of the reasons why he considered that, currently the canine of the chimpanzee is very big.
Mm-hmm.
Both males and in both males and the females, but the pattern of the awareness. What do you mean?
Of where?
Where?
Through life.
Mm.
Yeah, the where patterns
between canine and the other teeth is completely different from other monkeys or great apes, even gorillas and baboons. Completely different.
Okay.
Meaning that enlarged canine size of chimpanzees evolved as a new evolution.
I see.
After after the division from the common ancestor. So he hypothesized that the common ancestor probably more like chimpanzees than in bonobos socially. However, the sexual dimorphism was not very big, and the body size dimorphism is not very big. Mm-hmm. Mm. And then they formed not harem type society, mm-hmm. but a group including both multiple males and females as chimpanzees. However, after that, the lineage in the lineage of chimpanzees, more and more competitive males appear with greater canine size. Mm-hmm. So bonobos also have a very big canine.
Yeah.
But suddenly something occurred to bonobos, and that kind of the male aggressiveness or competitiveness was reduced, mm-hmm. and the females got the power. That is my hypothesis.
It's a, no, it's a wonderful story, and mm-hmm. I'm always excited to hear all the new observations that come out. And so I just getting towards the end of this interview, do you mind if I just ask a few final?
Yeah, okay.
So I got some request questions from mm-hmm. other people as uh-huh. well, including former graduate students and colleagues. But one thing I wanted to just briefly touch on, and we didn't have a chance to talk too much about it, but you not only studying chimpanzees, bonobos in Wamba, but also chimpanzees in Kalinzu Forest your wife and partner, Chie Hashimoto. Mm-hmm. And so you also have navigated this two-body problem. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean by two-body problem? That's like a lot of times people will become partners early in their career, but then have to find jobs within some scientific field like mm-hmm. primatology or mm-hmm. something. And oftentimes it's hard to get positions within the same institution or university or something. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You obviously are working in the same institution as Chie Hashimoto, but mm-hmm. you also work together in the field.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So maybe one question I can ask is, what is the direction? So you yourself are coming up on retirement mm-hmm. at the end of this year, but I assume you will not stop research activities. Mm-hmm. And so what is the current direction that the two of you together mm. are working on?
Yes, but of course Chie Hashimoto and myself have a different orientation of the studies, but both Hashimoto and myself have a big interest in the evolution of chimpanzees and bonobos and the humans as well. And then these days we have a common big interest on the evolution of the sexuality of chimpanzees and bonobos and humans. Apparently, difference in the sexuality is a very big influence on the society. Mm-hmm. Chimpanzees, the male competition is very great, and then bonobo females with extended receptivity successfully lower the male competition, and then they made a very peaceful society. And in human, by discarding the period of sexual receptivity, they could form the pair nuclear family mm-hmm. within the group. So those sexuality has a very key issue of the evolution of the society in hominin. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we want to do the same direction of the study of the same directions, focusing on the behavior and the hormone and if possible genetics to find out.
Okay. Mm. And I have a question from your former student, now assistant professor at Wildlife Research Center, Naoko Tokuyama, who asked you, she was asking, so since you have lots of experience studying bonobos and chimpanzees, which species do you prefer studying or observing, we can change it into, and why?
So my very original interest on the primatology started of the life history of dispersing sex. So when I was studying Japanese macaques in Aomori Prefecture and then Yakushima Island. I was studying the life history of mayors. Then when I went to Africa, I started to study the life history of females. And then now we have known a lot of things about the life history of the females. I did a lot of things, and Naoko Tokuyama did a lot of things, and even Toda, Kazuya Toda, is doing the study of the why females leave the group by the behavior of observation and the hormonal analysis. And then we came to know a lot about the female life history of bonobos. One of the reasons is that females are always there. So now I want to know more about the life history of the females of chimpanzees. It is really difficult. For example, in Kalinzu, some females we observe disappear after getting pregnancy. Then we don't see her many days or even years. And then we start to consider that she's died. Then 4 years later, she show up in front of us, carrying a new baby or something like that. During that period, she was almost living alone or in a very small party with other females. So it is very difficult to know about the real life history of females, chimpanzees. So now I'm going to get retired. And then it is very, very difficult to go to Wamba because it costs a lot. Even flying from Kinshasa City to the field, we have to pay $10,000 for one way for the chartered airplane. So after retirement, I don't like to eat the research money of the younger generations. So I handed over the position of the representative of the research group to Naoko Tokuyama and Kazuya Toda. And then I will more concentrated on the study of the chimpanzees.
I see.
Yeah, in Karin's forest.
Okay.
Together with Hashimoto.
Sounds like
we come together again.
Okay. Well, I have many more things I wanted to ask, but I think we should end the interview here, and I think that's a good place to do it. So, Dr. Takeshi Furuichi, thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you, too.
Okay.
Very interesting. Thank you.
You've been listening to The Primate Cast, a podcast series dedicated to all things primatology and wildlife science, to the conservation of species, and to the sharing of scientific knowledge. The podcast is hosted and produced by Andrew McIntosh, with artwork from Chris Martin and music from Andre Gonsalves. It is brought to you by the Center for International Collaboration and Advanced Studies in Primatology at Kyoto University's Center for the Evolutionary Origins of Human Behavior. Visit us online at theprimatecast.com and follow our social media feeds on Facebook and Twitter at theprimatecast. Drop us a line anytime to say hello, to tell us what you think about the show, and to suggest future guests for the podcast.